Our lesson today is going to be on the Great Pyramid and a pyramid lesson. So what we'd like to do with this, and I've given this talk a few times before. I changed it a little bit because recently I gave a lesson similar to this to the young people in Northern Illinois around, I don't know what, around New Year's. Snow on the ground, and a lot of kids were there. They're from, I think, 13 to early 20s. And I didn't know the background of the kids. I knew that they knew something about the truth, perhaps most likely had parents who were consecrated. But what was the basis of their faith? That was anybody's guess. I didn't know the majority of the kids. Some had a lot of faith, some didn't. And so I thought, well, how should I approach this in a way so that we actually establish things first? And I also had a discussion with a friend, a very good friend of mine, a Jewish man. We have lunch about every 6 weeks, but I'm an engineer. He's an engineer. And we worked with the same engineering consulting firm one time, you know, for a couple of years. And we would do expert witness type of thing. And it impressed me that before anybody's considered an expert, they always look at the evidence, or they look at evidence and whatnot before they say anything. They have to establish that they're an expert. So in talking to this friend of mine, his name's Mark, Mark Strauss, wonderful man. We got on the subject of talking about the Great Pyramid. So I talked about some of the very rudimentary proofs that this had to be designed by God himself. And by the end of our lunch, he almost fell off his chair. Harry! So, what we like to do is share this lesson on the Great Pyramid, with you kind of from that beginning. And then we want to go into some more of the deeper things. Now, what I did is I put up, a handout for all the slides I'm going to talk about here today. Plus, there's a PDF file if you want to look at the Great Pyramid in more detail. A lot of the scientific things, the things we're talking about here, equations, things that I talked to folks at NASA and other things like that. So if you want more detail, there's a PDF file with about 80 slides, all sorts of hyperlinks. So you can look at all the different main features of the pyramid and look at details on it. A lot of things from Brother Russell, from the Edgars. So when we look at the Great Pyramid, we have this wonderful scripture, Isaiah 19, 19 and 20. Oh, and let me just say that I've also run across some brethren who are just really into the Great Pyramid. You know, they carry pyramid passages with them all the time. And then there are some who thought, well, is the pyramid really, you know, is that really, is there any credence to it at all? So what we'd like to talk about is going to address all those things. Well, we have this wonderful scripture, Isaiah 19, 19 and 20. In that day, and we think we know what day that is, the day of the Lord, shall there be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar at the border thereof to the Lord? And it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt. And here we have the land of Egypt. Now, and if we, there we go. Now, this is looking from Cairo towards the Great Pyramid. Now, when you look at the buildings in the foreground, and I have a little green cursor. I hope you can see this. But these buildings, I don't know, 10, 15, maybe 20 stories. Here's what modern man has built. But when you look at the Great Pyramid, this mammoth, mammoth structure, and the Great Pyramid right here is bigger than the Second Pyramid. All this second Pyramid looks larger. It's just because it's built on higher land. But here's the Great Pyramid. Here's what God has built. Now, there are essentially five things we want to talk about. One is the enormousness, not the enormity, but the enormousness of the engineering effort it took to design the pyramid and build it, but mainly design it. And I'm not talking about a bunch of cleverly piled rocks in Egypt. I'm saying What would it take to actually design this pyramid with the information it has in it? Also, the identity of the designer. In other words, we want to say, who is this? If this is a witness, who's the one giving the witness? Who is this designer? Then we want to see, what is the most important stone in the entire pyramid? If you boil it down to simple concepts, what's the most important stone? What is the single most important passage, and why is it the most important? How does the pyramid show that? And then, how are you, my dear brethren, just like the pyramid? Just like the pyramid. So that's what we want to talk about. And thinking of some of the services we had earlier, when Brother Kent was talking about things, you know, men's hearts failing them for fear and chaos and anarchy and whatnot, we need something rock solid. You know, God wants us to have a very solid faith. Well, this is the Great Pyramid necessary for our faith? Well, no, it's not. We have the scriptures. However, the Great Pyramid is like a love letter, not only to us, but to the world of mankind, showing God's foreknowledge in that he knew the end from the beginning. So, and also, what does the pyramid say? Well, put out your ear. Can you hear it? Well, it's a silent witness. But we have to listen to that witness and really pay attention very carefully to see what it's saying. So, okay. Now, when we look at, and when I first was doing this, I wanted to start from the bounds of the universe and zoom in to Earth, but that would take too long to do. So if we start with planet Earth, here we have planet Earth. We're centered over Cairo, and what we're going to do is zoom in to the area of Egypt in this blue rectangle, and then here's what was in that blue rectangle. And then what we're going to do is zoom in around this area. This, by the way, is Lower Egypt. This is the Nile River. You can see the green agriculture from the waters of the Nile. This is lower in Egypt. This is Upper Egypt and Lower Egypt. But we've got a lot of desert area. But we're going to zoom into this little rectangle. And now we can actually see roads and, you know, some evidence of civilization. But we also have this area right here. Here's this big, big item. And you can see right here, this is a pyramid. It's greater than the next one or this little tiny one. So we're going to zoom in here. And here we are at the Great Pyramid. Great Pyramid. It's the one that can clearly be seen from space. You say, what else is there? Well, it's hard to see much of anything else, but it's the definitely the biggest, most massive pyramid. Now, if we were to up right close to the pyramid, it's a mammoth structure. It is a mammoth structure. And to give you a little perspective of how big it is, these little yellow things here, these are human beings. These aren't children. These are full-grown men standing by the Great Pyramid. So this thing is absolutely mammoth. It's 485 feet high. That's the height of about a 50-story building, you know, 48, 50-story building. So it's absolutely mammoth. And if we look at the footprint of the Great Pyramid, it's 761 feet square, or 580,000 square feet. And for American football, you know, the folks who bang heads and all that stuff, it's the equivalent of between 12 and 13 football fields. So this is absolutely enormous, just gigantic. And if we look at from Brother Russell's day, I found this nice illustration of the high buildings that existed in the world in the year 1884. Most of these things are church steeples, which is, you know, it's essentially a hollow, narrow steeple, which I think is cheating. You also had the Washington Monument, which is, again, a hollow building. But one thing else you had, what was also existing at that time, and also has the dates of when they were built, was the Great Pyramid. It's right up there with the three tallest buildings in 1884. And this was a solid building built in 2140 BC. So compared to other things that man has built, this thing is absolutely huge. So we'd like to go back to this statement, in that day shall be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar at the border thereof, and it shall be for a sign and for a witness. And we want to focus on this term witness, because again, in a court of law, if someone is going to be a witness, there's some qualifications for them to be a witness. For instance, if it's a crime or something that took place, were you an eyewitness? Yes, I was. Okay, you can testify. Were you there? Were you an eyewitness? No. I'm sorry, we can't listen to you. Oh, but I have testimony. I'm an expert in something, and that bears on the evidence in this case. And they say, okay, we may consider listening to you and listening to your testimony. But again, here's the Great Pyramid. Here are some people here to show that it's actually huge. So a witness unto the Lord and the host of the land of Egypt. But before a court of law would listen to the testimony, they want to know, what are the credentials of the witness? What's your education? What's your experience? Have you written a book on this? Have you done this kind of thing before? How long have you been in this field? And once the credentials are established, then you can look at then they'll listen to the testimony. Well, the credentials of this witness can be done actually pretty simply by looking at the outer dimensions of the pyramid. That's where we're going to start. And it's interesting that these outer dimensions are available to everybody to look at. But most folks, they look at it, they don't consider it, they don't listen, as was said earlier, they don't listen to this witness, and they don't draw conclusions. They don't use intelligent insight, which is really very simple to do. That's what we're going to do here. They don't draw conclusions and come up with insights as to who had to be, who absolutely had to be the designer and the only one in existence who could have designed the Great Pyramid. So let's take a look at this. Well, if you look at the unit of measure in the Great Pyramid, it turns out, now I want you to know, I went to a lot of trouble carving up planet Earth like this. We put it back together a little later. But if we look at the dimensions, the unit of measure for the Great Pyramid, it's the pyramid cubit and the pyramid inch, and they're both based on planet Earth. So if you look at planet Earth, this is 1/8 of planet Earth that's been removed. We have the atmosphere up above, you can see the clouds. But if you go to the very core of the Earth, or if you look at the polar diameter, and you can calculate the polar radius would be from the center of the Earth up to the North Pole. Now that North Pole, I'm not talking about magnetic north, or even the star Polaris, you know, the North Star is. I'm talking about the actual rotational axis of the Earth, the actual rotational axis of the Earth. If you look at that polar radius, it's 3,949.999 miles. Again, I got some of this from NASA. Or 250,000, et cetera, inches. Now, these are British inches we're talking about. But the pyramid cubit we're going to be looking at is, if you take this polar radius and you divide it by 10 million, this is the pyramid cubit. Okay, so the pyramid cubit, this unit of measure, is based on the Earth itself. What an amazing thing. And this would be 25.027 British inches. So it's just, it's a little bit larger than 25 British inches. And the pyramid, so the pyramid cubit divided by 25 would be just 1/1000th of an inch larger than a British inch, where the pyramid inch is 1/1000th British inches. Now, the thing about this is, when we look at the pyramid cubit and we look at the pyramid inch, both of these are based on planet Earth itself. So if you're going to come up with this measurement scheme, you have to have an incredibly precise and intimate knowledge of planet Earth in order to do this. So whoever designed whoever designed this, they had this intimate knowledge. They had this very precise knowledge of planet Earth. So if we look at this square base, of the pyramid, and we'll draw this blue square around the square base, we'll find, using that pyramid cubit that we have defined from planet Earth itself, The length of one base is 365.242 cubits. So that's a nice number. Does that have any meaning? Well, it turns out for the Earth, as it does its revolution around the sun, it's rotating for a solar tropical year. It's rotating exactly 365.242 days. Notice this is exactly the same number to six significant figures. So it tells you whoever designed the pyramid had an intimate knowledge of planet Earth, of the dimensions of Earth, and the exact length of a year to a precision in excess of anything that mankind would have known back 2000 years BC. So that's very interesting. So that, all right, well, what else? Well, we also have another feature of Earth is it has a precessional cycle. Now, when we look at a precessional cycle, if you've ever played with a top, you know, if you have a top, if my hand is a top and it's spinning real fast, you'll find that slowly it kind of does this. It precesses, you know, very slowly. And the Earth does the same thing in space, but it's a very, very long cycle of 25,770 years. So let's see what, now notice the Earth is rotating on its axis many, many, really, a whole lot, millions of times in this period of 25,770 years. Well, do you have another 25,000 years? Let's do this again. So what is happening is the axis of the Earth is actually not always pointing at the North Star, but over time, its precession will cause it to move in this type of motion. Well, this is an extremely long cycle that the Earth goes through. And for some, so that it's right now, it happens to be pointing at the North Star. If you look at Polaris, the North Star, it's kind of a wimpy, weak little star, but it's very convenient and the Earth's axis points towards it. But if you look at very accurate maps or if you're a mariner or whatnot, you'll notice that it changes from year to year, a second of arc or something like that. So, but now the Earth's axis is pointing towards Polaris, but in the future it will move because the North Star will not be the pole star, not because the star is moving, but because the axis of the Earth is moving as the Earth processes. So for somebody to understand the precession, they would have to have time on their hands, you know, to look up in the sky. They would have to be able to look very extremely accurately, and they'd have to have a whole lot of this time to realize something is happening over these 25,000 years. Well, why do we bring this up? Well, it turns out if you look at the square base of that Great Pyramid that we talked about, Ben, when you look at the sum of these diagonals in pyramid inches, that those sum of the diagonals is 25,827 inches. Now, Earth's precessional cycle is 25,770 years. Now, when I talk about 25,770 years, this is something that cannot be directly measured. It has to be both measured and calculated because this is a dynamic feature of planet Earth which changes as celestial bodies, comets, whatnot, pass by, various things that happen throughout the solar system. But this is I was looking at 12 papers on this, and this was the best, their best estimate of this. Now notice that these two, 25,827, 25,770, the comparison of this is accurate to 0.2%. That's 1 part in 500. So once again, the Great Pyramid we find is describing planet Earth. It's describing planet Earth and the area of planet Earth. So whoever designed the Great Pyramid had a tremendously accurate, intimate knowledge of Earth and its workings. Now, if we look at the square base of the Great Pyramid, the perimeter would be the length around that base. And if we were to take that length and make that into a circle, as we've done here, so that the length of that circle is the same as the perimeter of that square. It turns out if you take the radius of that, the radius of that circle, that is the height of the pyramid. And if you remember, circumference equals 2 pi r, this is how we get this radius. This would be the height of the pyramid. So the designer said, well, let's make this the height of the pyramid. Well, that wouldn't be that tough to do. Just figure out, well, how big is this perimeter? What's the radius of the circle? And you make the pyramid that high. But so which happens to be 484.9 feet in English units. But it's also 1/1,000,000th the distance of the sun between the apogee and the perigee, the closest and the nearest distance, because the Earth is not a circular orbit, it's elliptical. But that distance to the sun, 1 billion times the 484.9 feet, is between the nearest and farthest distance of the Earth to the sun. So that's amazing, because there's no way to adjust this. There's no way to adjust this. If you're going to make it, if you're going to have pi in the pyramid, you've already determined that height. So there's no way to adjust that. So once again, the designer of the Great Pyramid has an intimate knowledge of planet Earth, its dynamics. Now, one other thing we'd like to talk about, which I don't think the Edgars mentioned this, nor does Brother Russell, but this is an established fact. If you take the base of the pyramid and make that the diameter of a circle, because of the pyramid is very steep, there would be a little bit left over at the top. Now, if we make this the radius of another circle, so we have the blue and the yellow circle here, it turns out that's exactly proportion, the exact same ratio of the moon to the Earth. So if we look at the diameter of the Earth to the diameter or the moon to the Earth, that's precisely 0.273. So again, whoever has designed this great pyramid has an intimate understanding of the Earth-Moon relationship. So that's very interesting. I'm sure there are others who have looked at that and said, okay, well, that's very curious. That's kind of neat. Boy, these pagans were pretty clever in what they did. But what's the real insight? What does all this really mean? Are we really listening to what the pyramid is saying, just with the outer dimensions? Well, I think to see what we're talking about here, we can ask the question, can we build a similar pyramid on another planet? In other words, if this is easy to do, let's go to Mars. Let's go to some other planet that has a moon, and we'll build a pyramid that has all the same stuff in it. Well, let's try it out. So let's go to Mars, and we'd say, okay, what's the polar diameter of Mars? Find out the polar radius, come up with our qubit. Okay, now let's make a square-base pyramid. And it's going to be the length of the Martian year in the based in the amount of rotations of the planet Mars. So we find out whatever that number of Martian days is. We take our qubit tape, our Martian qubit tape, we stretch it, we draw a square, and now we have the base for our pyramid. So things are going pretty good. I mean, our builder says, hey, no problem. I like this job. I'm going to get paid soon because I'm building this pyramid. Okay. Well, then the designer says, all right, the other thing we'd like to do is we'd like to make the sum of the diagonals equal the precessional cycle of Mars in years. And the builder says, excuse me? Can I adjust these? Well, I'm sorry. No, you can't adjust them because once we have the square base, those diagonals are already set. They're set in stone. And the builder says, well, wait a second. How can I make sure that whatever these diagonals come out to magically just happen to fit the precessional cycle of Mars? I mean, the probability of that is 1 in 1 billion or less. There's no way I can guarantee that this would even come out. So the designer might say, okay, well, just hold on to your horses. Let's talk about the next specification. I'd like the height of the pyramid that you're going to build to be 1/1,000,000th the distance to the sun. So the builder might say, okay, fine, I can do that. how far is it to the sun from Mars in these, in, you know, divide that by a billion. That's how high I'll make the pyramid. So he can find out what that distance is. But then the designer says, oh, yes, one other thing. We want to make sure that that height of the pyramid, not only is it one billionth of the distance to the sun, but if you take that square base, which you've already made, take the perimeter, make it into a circle, that radius of the circle must also be the height of the pyramid. Well, the builder would say, excuse me, I can't even adjust this to make sure it fits. I mean, it's already set. I don't think I'm going to be able to do this. So the designer says, well, here's the one last specification we'd like to talk about. So if we take the base of this pyramid and make it into a, make that the diameter of a circle, and then take that part that's left over, make that the diameter of another circle, we'd like that to be the precise ratio of the moon of Mars to the radius of the Mars's moon to the radius of the planet Mars. So the builder would say, forget it. There's absolutely no way. The probability of any of these things, any one of these things individually is like one in a million, one in a billion. There's absolutely no way I can do this. I'm leaving. Goodbye. So what we can conclude? Well, this base length, the length of that base of the pyramid, it sets the length of the year for planet Earth, the precessional cycle of planet Earth, the distance to the sun, and also the Earth-Moon ratio. There's four independent celestial features. This is actually called an overdetermined system, an overdetermined system. And for to go to some arbitrary planet and do it like this, it would simply be impossible. Can't be done. But it's not impossible for God. So how did God do it? Well, it's very simple, because God designed the pyramid first. He didn't build it first, but he had the design of the pyramid in his mind first, even before the creation of the universe, I feel. Then he designs the earth, the sun, the moon, and the stars so that they were designed to fit what he wanted the pyramid to show. If we look at Psalm 8:3, when I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained. If we look at that word ordained, it means fashioned, set in place. How were they designed? How were they actually built? They're built to actually fit the plan that God wanted. So brethren, when you look at the chaos in the world, and I'd like you to just stomp your feet. Go outside, stomp your feet on that planet you're on, because the earth, the sun, even the moon itself was designed by God for lessons for us. My help cometh from the Lord, which made heaven and earth. He made heaven and earth. In in the third volume, page 341, Brother Russell talks about God as the great architect of the universe. And what does an architect do? He comes up with plans. He doesn't build it first and then make the drawings. What the architect does is he comes up with the plans. He says, what do I want this building to do? What do I want it to show? What do I want it to convey? He draws up the plans, and then it is built. Isaiah 46:10, declaring the end from the beginning, the foreknowledge of God. So when we look at these things, let us have faith. You know, when I lift up my eyes unto the hill, from whence cometh my help? Well, we're not waiting for the armies to come over the hills to save us, because my help cometh from the Lord who made, who designed heaven and earth. So I've got a lesson of my faithfulness in him. He is going to do all of his pleasure. He declares the end from the beginning. Well, when we look at the distribution of the continents on Earth, tectonic plates, all those good things, we'll find that this little yellow and red square here, that's picturing the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And if you look at the meridian, and if you look at the parallel, they go through more land than any other meridian or parallel, which there's only one place on the entire earth where that happens, which shows to you that the continents were actually positioned to mathematically point to the pyramid. So again, looking at the credentials, who was our mystery designer, who could do this? Could Satan do this? Well, he didn't create or design the universe. Could aliens do that? Can they create a planet? Can they create a star? Who could do this? Well, there's only one. It's God himself. So if we look at just the outer dimensions of the pyramid, we can establish the credentials of this designer. This is God himself. So once we have those credentials that have been established, now let's look at God's testimony. Because after all, do we need to go to the Great Pyramid to know the distance to the sun, the diameter of the earth, the ratio of the earth to the moon? No, we know all that. We know all that. In fact, we've got probes that have gone all over the solar system. Man has, you know, the times of restitution. His knowledge of all these things is extreme. So why was it put in the pyramid? It was so we could see God's credentials that in over 4,000 years when this was built, these things were put in the end of the design. The builders built it, but it's the designer who made sure all the other things in the solar system, even the placement of the stars, was correct for what the pyramid was going to show. So all of these scientific features are really showing the credentials of the designer. So then we will listen to his testimony about his plan for mankind. Well, going back to the Great Pyramid itself in Jeremiah 32, 18 and 20, the mighty God, the Lord of hosts is his name, which has set signs and wonders in the land of Egypt, even unto this day. Think about thinking for all time, not only designing it from knowing the end from the beginning, but he wants us to have this. This is a love letter from God to his faithful ones now and for the world in the future. Or we can look at in Job 38:6, which defines what it's talking about, on which have its sockets been sunk. And when if you look at the corner sockets of the Great Pyramid, the sockets, these are the only ones who have actually been sunk into the bedrock. And all the other pyramids, they're just sitting on top of the bedrock. But these sockets have been actually sunk into the bedrock. So it uniquely identifies the Great Pyramid. Or who hath cast its cornerstone? Its cornerstone. Well, to most folks, they'd say, well, don't you see four cornerstones down below? Well, sure, but who hath cast its cornerstone? It's the big cornerstone up above, the big one. That's the important one. Well, in that day, the day of the Lord, there should be this altar unto the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt and on the pillar at the border thereof. And it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt. In the land of Egypt. What's the land of Egypt? What does that represent? It represents the world without faith, the world in chaos, the world without belief. But here it is. Here it is. It's been put there on the pillar on the border. So it's in the midst of the land of Egypt, and it's on the border thereof. Well, if we look at the Nile Delta, we'll see that the Nile Delta, there's a fellow who was a hydrographer, and he was mapping the Nile Delta, and he says, you know, that's very interesting. It's almost it's a section of a perfect circle. So he said, where does this circle actually, where's the center of the circle? When he did that, he found out it's precisely at the center of the Great Pyramid. So it's showing that the Great Pyramid, this sign, this witness, is in the midst of the land of Egypt, in the middle of this circle. There it is, the Great Pyramid. But it's also on the border thereof. So if we look at that close-up of that photo of the pyramid from space, we can see there's Lower Egypt, here's Upper Egypt, here's the Great Pyramid right here. So it's right on the border between Lower and Egypt and Upper Egypt. So it's on the border of Egypt, and it's in the midst of Egypt. Now, how else could this possibly be done? And when we look at Upper and Lower Egypt, here's the Giza Plateau, and here's the Great Pyramid. Remember, the Great Pyramid was 485 feet tall. And this this plateau is a big plateau. See this fuzzy stuff here? These are people. These are people. This is, I don't know, 50 or 100 feet. This is a huge plateau. So it's uniquely identifying, not in wimpy little terms, but in very definite terms. Okay. Now the most important stone in the pyramid, and we can look in the first volume for this, but we can also look at Ephesians 1:10, that in the dispensation of the fullness of times, he might gather together in one all things in Christ, both which are in heaven and which are on earth, even in him. Now, when we look at this top stone, this five-sided top stone, if you're looking at a 3D view, this represents the Christ in the Christ head and body in glory, and all mankind will be conformed to this. We have the great company already. We have at this point, when the church is complete, great company complete, they'll have the same character likeness as Christ. We have Israel restored. They'll come into the kingdom, certainly the ancient worthies, and all mankind, they will have the same character as Christ himself, as the Christ head and body. So all mankind will be conformed to the image of God's dear son. Man will be the earthly image of God on earth. So what is the most important stone? What is showing this? It's the stuff, the top stone. The top stone in the pyramid shows what all of God's intelligent creation, human creation, must be in order to have everlasting life. So the most important stone, the top stone. Next, what we'd like to do is we have this entrance to the Great Pyramid, which it doesn't have its casing stones right now. So what we'd like to do is go back in our time machine to about 825 AD. So we'll do that gradually. Hopefully you're seeing this. Notice none of us have gotten any younger when we went in this time machine. But what happened was in 825 AD, there's this fella who thought, well, there must be a lot of treasure in here. Who would go to this expense to build this huge building without putting a lot of treasure in it, like they had in other tombs, which they thought it was. So he's this fellow named Al-Mamun. He starts digging in the side of the Great Pyramid, and we can see him digging, 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 digging. And as they dig, all of a sudden they hear this ka-thump, and there was a stone that fell. It made a sound. They said, well, that must be something important. Let's dig in that direction. So they went in that direction and they found this granite plug. They found this passage, but it looked like this granite plug was sealing off this passage. It must be where the treasure chamber is. So they're trying to chisel around that, and it's so hard they realize we can't do it. So they chisel around the soft, much softer limestone. And now when we look at the, oops, I want to do this one. When we look at the major features of the Great Pyramid, the major features of the Great Pyramid, what we'll see is we'll see this forced hole. We have this entrance passage and a descending passage. Hopefully you can see my cursor going down this subterranean well. Then we have a first ascending passage which goes to a horizontal passage and something that is called the Queen's Chamber. Now, in God's plan, it's not a Queen's Chamber. This is really picture something for perfect mankind. But the names that are given, this is important to see, the names that are given to these features are the names that Egyptologists gave to the Great Pyramid over the centuries. So these are not God's names for it. This is the Egyptologists' names. We have this huge passageway called the Grand Gallery that leads up to a little antechamber and then to what they call the King's Chamber. Now, as far as what is the most important passage? Well, if you got into the Great Pyramid, you'd find yourself going down, 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 down. You couldn't get by this granite plug, and you'd go down, 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 all the way to this subterranean chamber, and which is a bottomless, it has no floor. It's essentially a bottomless pit. It's a picture of destruction. And really a picture of mankind going down into death. That's really what it is. Now we have these upper so-called King's Chamber and the Queen's Chamber. which we know the King's Chamber is a picture of the ultimate position that Christ had in body and a perfected mankind. Now, if you found yourself in the Great Pyramid and all of a sudden it was hermetically sealed, the door was hermetically sealed, over time, you were going to die. You're going to suffocate. So you have to go to wherever there's air. Well, it turns out in the only place that you find outside air coming into the Great Pyramid is at the King's Chamber and the Queen's Chamber. Turns out the Queen's Chamber, these passages aren't really open yet, but in the King's Chamber they are. So the thing is, if you're going to have life, you have to go to where the air passages are. That's the whole picture. You have to go to where the air passages are. Well, you might say, well, let's just go up this first ascending passage. That's the most direct route. Well, you can't do that because this granite plug blocks you. What is the only way to get there? Well, the only way is go up this well shaft, this irregular well shaft that goes through this grotto and up. And that's an opening both to the Grand Gallery and up to the King's Chamber and to the horizontal passage in the Queen's Chamber. So the most important passage in the Great Pyramid is the well shaft. That is the only path to life for mankind. This grotto is picturing, if you were stuck in there and it was hermetically sealed, you would have to get to the King's Chamber or the Queen's Chamber in order to breathe. But when we look at God's plan, what does this really mean? Well, that well shaft goes up to two major passages in the Great Pyramid. And let me, one passage is the Grand Gallery. Now, the Grand Gallery is really the opportunity. It's the recognition of the opportunity for the high calling. That's really what it's showing. Now, many would say, well, this is the high calling, but it's actually the call to glory, honor, and immortality. Because when we take a look at where the Grand Gallery leads, it leads the south end or the upper end of the Grand Gallery leads to a picture of consecration where one would stoop down through this large limestone leaf. Then they would be standing in the beginning of this antechamber. They'd be standing right here. Their feet are on granite. The toes are on granite. The rest is on limestone. And they'd be standing in front of this granite leaf. So that's really a picture of they've given up their human will, but now they're going under this granite leaf, taking up God's will. This is a picture of the school of Christ. So the Grand Gallery is really a picture of the call to this, then accepting it, making this consecration, staying in the school of Christ and in the antechamber. And then at the end of a course, we go under the second veil of the tabernacle, again, in this low stoop, and we end up in the King's Chamber, which is a picture of the perfection of the divine nature. Okay, and the floor of this, everything on the right side is limestone, really picturing human things. And on the left side, wherever you have granite, which these large black dots are representing granite, those are showing divine things, heavenly things, divine things. So this is one of the main destinations that the well shaft would lead to. And here we have the King's Chamber. If we look at John 14, in my Father's house are many mansions, etc. So you can look at that a little more yourself. Now, with the well shaft always also leads to this horizontal passage. And what we're going to do is look at this horizontal passage, which goes to human perfection. And we can see this horizontal passage. One of the main lessons is this would be a picture of the mediatorial phase of the kingdom. The first 6/7 of it are very low. It's only about 4 feet high. So you'd be bent over as you're walking. And this is mankind under the discipline of the mediatorial phase of the kingdom. But as they are actually benefiting completely from the disciplines, they can stand upright. They're now virtually perfect human beings. They're helping one another. And eventually, in this last seventh, it's leading to the Queen's Chamber And that Queen's Chamber is picturing human perfection. So that last seventh would be easy. And the main point is that that well shaft that we saw leads to where these air passages are going. It's a picture of life. Now, we'd like to, to the King's Chamber and to the Queen's Chamber. Now, we'd like to look at Jesus. We want to just touch on one or two chronological features of the Great Pyramid. There's a whole lot more, but we just want to touch on a few. Some facts about Jesus. We know that he was born under the law during the law of dispensation in October of 2 BC. He was a perfect human being. He was born a perfect human being. At age 30, he made his consecration unto death. He finished his course. He died 33 and a half years later at Passover 33 AD. And he opened the new and living way. Now, looking with these facts about Jesus, we can take a look at things in the Great Pyramid and come up with a chronological date. In other words, a datum point or a starting point from which all the other chronology in the pyramid can be dated. This is a picture of the major features. This is from Great Pyramid passages. And we've been talking about the Queen's Chamber, picturing the floor of the Queen's Chamber is now picturing human perfection. So if we go from this idea of human perfection, which is the ultimate goal of mankind, as they're in the Queen's Chamber, that floor of the Queen's Chamber, if we extend that floor of the Queen's Chamber to the right, all the way over to that first ascending passage, which is picturing the law dispensation, what we're going to do is we see this blue dotted rectangle. We're going to blow that up and get some information about the date of Jesus' birth. So we have this plane of, this is a more detailed drawing from Great Pyramid passages. And if we take the floor level of the Queen's Chamber, that's extending it out. This is showing human perfection and extending it out to the floor of the first ascending passage. This would be the point of Jesus' birth in October 2 BC. Jesus, when the fullness of time was come, God sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law. So we have Jesus' birth being shown at October 2 BC. Now, if we go up this first ascending passage about as close as you can imagine, 33.45 or 33 and a half inches, what would happen is this is now the point of the vertical line of the north wall of the Grand Gallery, which is showing the opening of the new and living way. The horizontal distance from this line to the point of Jesus' birth is 29.99, or Jesus' death, 33 AD. But so the base of this triangle would be 30 inches. The hypotenuse is 33.5 inches. So that's a very, very specific to show details about Jesus' life. Now, the angle that would do this, would have the ratio of the base to the hypotenuse, is the angle 26 degrees, 18 minutes, 9.7 seconds. We'll find that in many places in the Great Pyramid and other places where the Edgars have pointed this out in Great Pyramid passages. But one of the main things we want to see is October 2 BC is at this point. You can find that on the Jesus' birth. You can find that on the first ascending passage. Okay, now with this, if we go down the first ascending passage and we go up the descending passage, we can come up to this scored line. Now, if we look at this scored line, the descending passage, that was a passage of showing mankind's descent into death and destruction. But if we look at what is shining down that line, what does this point to? Well, it points to Alpha Draconis. This is the dragon constellation. And we find that in 2140 BC, it turns out this pointed at midnight on the autumnal equinox. It pointed to Alpha Draconis, the most prominent star. Perpendicular to this in 2140 BC is the direction of the Pleiades, where there's this scribed line really indicating the date of the building of the pyramid. And that's pointing to Alcyone, which is the most prominent star in the Pleiades. So 2140 BC, just by astronomical calculations that the Edgars used and were validated with Piazzi Smith, 2140 BC is what this comes out to show astronomically. Now, if we look at the, and these two are at right angles. Now, if we go from the dates we've just established of Jesus' crucifixion in April 3rd, AD 33, and we know 2140 BC, we can check and see, is this correct? Well, if we come down from the point of Jesus' crucifixion, at the very end of that first ascending passage, we have 1543 pyramid inches down to this point of intersection, and we can then go up to this scribed line is 628.068. Now, if we add these together, it's 2171.5 inches. It's interesting, if you go from autumn 2140 BC to the spring of 33 AD, it's 2171.5 years. So both astronomically and in pyramid inches, we can see that this scribed line is showing the dating of the building of the pyramid. And it's really a validation that the point of Jesus' birth or the point of Jesus' death can be used for chronological measurements in the pyramid. We just wanted to mention that. That's all we're going to talk about with respect to chronology. There are many, many time proofs in God's plan, which are shown in the Great Pyramid. So we urge that you would look at these in more detail, both in the third volume and in pyramid passages. Now, the last thing we want to mention is that here we have this Great Pyramid, 485 feet high. The adversary had a big problem. It was covered with white casing stones. It would be the biggest structure on Earth for the next 4,000 years. How would he hide this? How would he hide it? How would you hide it? Well, the answer is in plain sight. It's going to hide it in plain sight. I think we know that the religion of Egypt was a pagan religion. They were worshiping Osiris. It's a picture of Orion. Pharaoh would become Osiris. And if we look at the three stars in Orion's belt, we have these three stars which you see here. Now, I was watching a documentary, Egyptologists, and they were saying, well, you know, what the Egyptians were trying to do was put heaven on earth. And if you look at the orientation of the stars in Orion's belt, you have a big one, one that's almost as bright, and then you have a small one. The one in the center is offset a little bit. And then you look at the orientation of the three pyramids. We have the Great Pyramid, the second pyramid is offset, and then the Little Pyramid, exactly the same orientation. So their conclusion was, well, What Egypt was trying to do is put heaven on earth. Well, I realized the folks in this documentary, they didn't know anything about God's plan. But how would you hide the Great Pyramid and make it look just like a curiosity? It's just part of a pagan religion. Well, you would do it exactly this way. This is what the adversary did. He couldn't overrule the destruction of the Great Pyramid, but he could arrange for the other pyramids to be built around it to make the pyramid look like it's part of a pagan religion. So how are you just like the pyramid? Well, dear brethren, the true church is hidden in plain sight also. You carry Bibles. You call yourselves Christians. Of course, when people hear the word Christian, what do they think? Trinity, eternal torment, immortal soul, and you spell just us, justice as just us. Everybody else is going to hell, aren't they? And you open your mouth and you try to share wonderful things. Do they hear you? Well, it's just like when Moses came back from Mount Sinai to Egypt to talk to Israel, and he was telling them about this wonderful deliverance. And Moses spake so unto the children of Israel, but they hearkened not unto Moses for anguish of spirit and cruel bondage. Well, the rest of the world is under anguish of spirit and cruel bondage of selfishness, of the urgencies of day to day. They don't have the time, the inclination, or the hearing ear to hear these wonderful things. Brethren, we have the wonderful privilege. We have the benefit of this well shaft. We've gone up the grand gallery. We're in this antechamber that is shown. Whereas the rest of mankind, they're still going down that descending passage to destruction. This is from The Miracle in Stone by Joseph Seiss. Oops, let me share this one last thing. Joseph Seiss in 1877, he wrote this. Men may sneer, but they cannot laugh down this mighty structure, nor scoff out of it the angles, proportions, measures, nature references, and sacred correspondences which its maker gave it. Here they are in all their speaking significance, stubborn and invisible, beyond all power to suppress. So, dear brethren, we hope that we've certainly established that the only one who could have designed the Great Pyramid is God himself. It's a wonderful witness, and may the Lord add his blessing.